This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
I'm Chris McCarty.
And I'm Robbie Greenfield.
And this is the Extra Time Podcast.
We are marking a special occasion this evening. We're building up to some really intriguing, some appetizing second leg quarterfinal matches in the UEFA Champions League between Man City and Real Madrid, as Chris just referenced in his sports headlines there. Bayern Munich, host Arsenal in the other second leg quarterfinal tie. But it is 100 days to go until this. Of course, referencing the 2024 yes. Paris Olympics.
Indeed,
is this a brand new theme tune?
It's the official anthem, I believe. According to YouTube, I dug this out today, Rob. This is the official anthem for the Paris Olympics and Paralympics. And today marks the 100-day kind of run in, the final home stretch, if you will, before 10,500 athletes competing over 329 events. The Paris
and
Games.
I will say this, I would say that of all the events in the pandemic, the Olympics suffered the most.
Completely agree.
Just because of the behind closed doors. I think that the Olympics needs that crowd, it needs that energy, it needs that sort of carnival atmosphere. And the Tokyo Olympics, they did the best they could under the circumstances, but it feels like it's been 8 years since we had an Olympics.
And I've said this to many people, given the fact, Rob, that you were fortunate enough to be in Japan for the Rugby World Cup in 2019, you have already stated probably one of the best weeks of your life. Japan embraced it, the world embraced Japan at that Rugby World Cup, and it was supposed to be the perfect kind of appetizer for the main course, which was the Olympic Games in 2020. It's a travesty that Tokyo and the country of Japan didn't get to put their best foot forward in those Olympic Games. And I know myself, you know me, sporting anorak, absolutely love my sport no matter what it is. That Olympic Games passed me by. If I'm honest, I can't remember much from it.
I just remember Caleb Dressel dominating the swimming.
That's basically all
I remember from it.
To a point, I couldn't tell you.
It was an Italian disappointing.
It was
behind closed doors. Yeah. It kind of, as Chris just mentioned there, it was an underwhelming Olympic Games, but it kind of heightens the anticipation
100%.
For Paris 2024, where we're back on track after spectacular games in London in 2012, not to mention Beijing in 2008 with the emergence of Usain Bolt.
2016 in Rio.
And then 2016 in Rio as well. And we're joined in studio by an Olympian. You know, we thought we'd bring in the top shelf.
Someone who's been there.
Absolutely, indeed. And he is a man who walked away with a silver medal at the 2016 Olympic Games. A man who we've spoken to on numerous occasions at the Emirates Dubai Sevens. It's this man.
Dan Norton step in. He's frying it like eggs.
That is classic Dan Norton.
Norton beats him.
Norton with some space. And now they're taking chase. The top try scorer in the World Series.
You know, sometimes we have, footballers who played as defenders, centre-backs in here, and we try and dig out one goal that they've scored in their career to play as a highlight. This man scored over 350 tries, so this was not a problem to find a highlight reel for him.
I was on YouTube today looking for this. He's got one video that goes on for 8.5 minutes, for goodness sake. It is the one and only Dan Norton. And newly as well, we weren't aware of this until this morning. You're a Dubai resident now as well, Dan. A very good evening to you.
Good evening, guys. How are you doing? You okay?
How are you finding this bright, sunny weather in Dubai?
it's been getting used to it. It's been nice. Obviously, yesterday was a bit of a shock to the system. But got here safely tonight. So, looking forward to having a little chat with you guys.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you in studio. And thanks for coming in, because
Indeed.
The roads are still, I won't call them as treacherous as yesterday, but there are still pockets out there of delays and obstructions and what have you. So thank you so much for making the effort to come into the studio. And of course, it's worth reminding everyone listening that you are the all-time leading try scorer in the HSBC World Sevens Series. And it's not a record that's going to fall anytime soon, is it, Dan?
Well, you say that. I'm hoping there's one guy, Perry Baker, American guy, still playing. I'm hoping he doesn't get there. I keep telling him every time. How long left, mate? I'm hopeful he doesn't get there. But look, it's for the benefit of the sport, right? So, he's an amazing player. He's done amazing things for so long, coming kind of cross athlete from American football into rugby. So, yeah, it really excites and adds a good element to it as well.
And not to embarrass you here, Dan, but you were in the green room and I popped out to see you before we came on air. And I've got to say that you're in heck of a nick. You're actually sobering thought this. You're younger than me, for goodness sake, Dan. You could still be out there. You could be adding more to your 350 plus tries.
Yeah, no, there has been a couple of thoughts when I'm sat in the office behind the computer thinking, what am I doing here? I'm enjoying retirement. Again, I think it's ingrained in my DNA that I need to train and move every day. So yeah, I'm enjoying kind of doing it here in the sun. Exciting and yeah, enjoying kind of the next step away from rugby into the real world, as you say.
What is the next step? Can you divulge?
Yeah, so at the moment, I've been here, as you've already alluded to, for 6 months, working for sports marketing.
Brilliant.
So yeah, really enjoying kind of, again, being sports focused, finding kind of commercial opportunities, events. That's kind of where I see my kind of self developing. It's been a long journey, kind of moving away from sport, obviously doing something for 13 years and then trying to find something new, change of purpose, etc. But yeah, what better place to
be? Is there any support in the kind of rugby world that helps you kind of facilitate that? Or because a lot of sportsmen and women say that when they come to the end of their careers, they do kind of lack a framework, if that makes sense. They feel like they're kind of out in the cold a little bit.
Yeah, so like in the UK, we have the RPA, the Rugby Players Association, and they do help us through that. So while you're playing, there's opportunities to do further education through university or open university or courses or whatever kind of your passion is, or if you don't know what that is, they can help kind of support that. I think at the same time, even if you are ready to leave sport, there's still a massive void of some degree. Like even if you are ready, there's a whole kind of change of kind of routine, planning. You've got to plan your own holidays rather than being told by a team manager where to go and where to be. But it takes some adjusting as with any new job. But I'm enjoying where I'm at the moment, where I'm heading. Obviously, sport here in the region is doing exciting things. Saudi is making a lot of noise. Yeah. Yeah, I'm really enjoying that kind of next step.
Were you always thinking, you know, obviously the Sevens is a global roadshow. Dubai, over the years that you've been here, because you've been coming here for, what, 15 years, Dan?
Not that old. Not that old, am I? No, first time here was 2008.
Okay.
Playing 16, in the Invitational.
So well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Actually, yeah, quick math on that. it's been, again, like one of the reasons why I was here was it was one of the best stops on the World Series. Coming here during the English winter and playing here in the sun was always a real appealing factor. And like I said, I'm just enjoying the fact that I can now get down to the beach 20 minutes away. You can kind of run along the beach and exercise in the sun, play a bit of paddle as well. So, a nice lifestyle change for the time being.
I tell you what, it's a sobering thought because you've lived many lives, seemingly. You know, you're a professional rugby seven star. You're still only 36, for goodness sake. And here you are moving into a next chapter. But we're here to celebrate the Olympics, 100 days to the Olympic Games. You're a rugby man through and through. Be honest with us. As a young boy, did you ever dream of being an Olympian?
Yeah, no. So again, growing up, 9 years old when I first started playing rugby, that was never the dream. That was never part of the journey. Like for me, it was either playing for Gloucester, my hometown, big passion, being from the Southwest. You wanted to be one of the best in the Southwest. So Gloucester was my passion. That's what I used to go to the weekends and watch with my dad. And then from there, it's playing for international 15s, international at Twickenham. That's what kind of you lived for. Now there's an opportunity through the Olympics to play in the Olympics. And you know, when you're growing up, the only sport you see with your family and when you watch with the whole wider squad is kind of the Olympics. It's the big dream. And now it's an opportunity for rugby players. So, yeah, it's really exciting. But no, I never thought growing up that I'd have the opportunity to do that now.
And in terms of its significance, it underlines when you look at someone like Antoine Dupont, who decided to miss an entire Six Nations to ensure that he could go to change code. I mean, he's that good, I suppose, that he could walk into pretty much any kind of rugby team whatsoever. But he then went and played sevens for France with the sole purpose of playing at his home Olympics in Paris of 2024. And he's basically, if not the biggest, one of the biggest international stars in rugby right now. So that's a heck of a statement from him.
Yeah, 100%. I think it adds value to kind of how unique and how amazing rugby sevens is. Obviously, I'm a bit biased playing the sport myself for so long, but yeah, to see some of the great names coming across and trying the sport for the first time or a handful of times just shows why and it's so powerful. And again, 2016, the first time sevens was in the Olympics, it really shows that it captivated the whole audience of being so many cross-sport, so many cross-nations, Fiji winning its first medal, its first gold medal, which we had a big hand in playing. So yeah, it just shows the growth and how rugby kind of brings together so many different unique opportunities for different nations as well.
How special? I always wonder. I mean, I'm never going to get there, for goodness sake. And
You never know.
Never. I'm not that way inclined at all, Dan. I'm not skilled.
The Olympics keeps adding events.
Oh, yeah, well, exactly.
Beard growing, maybe?
Maybe I've got a chance of winning gold on that front. But give us a kind of semblance of what it is like being an Olympian. Walking out with the great British flag as part of the opening ceremony, staying in the Olympic Village. Amazing memories.
Yeah, 100%. So again, like looking back, obviously today before coming in, kind of doing a bit of research and reminiscing about what it was in 2016, there was a big, massive disparity between 2016 and 2020 or 2021 because of COVID Tokyo. In Tokyo. Like, it made it a really sour taste. I think obviously 2016 was very rose tinted. We were on a we won a medal. That's really powerful. Being able to connect with a wider audience. But yeah, being able to rub shoulders with some of the greats, you know, Usain Bolt, Serena Williams and the sisters, like being able to be in that kind of circus of athletes. You've got everything from, you know, 7 foot tall basketball players to 4 foot something gymnasts. So it really is a melting pot of some of the best athletes in the whole entire world.
And you're literally, when you see your Serena Williamses and your Usain Bolt, you're in the same cafeteria. You're literally, if you wanted to, you could pop over and get their autograph.
Yeah, 100%. So it's, I think they said it's the biggest tent in the world, so obviously it's there to house 10,000 athletes, so it has to be pretty big. But yeah, you're literally rubbing shoulders and eating with guys next to you. You're in the queuing for food, and these guys are there as well, obviously competing at the same time. So yeah, it's really cool as a sports nut to be able to go around and see that. Like, in the village where we were, you're staying there with all the different nations.
Where was that village? In Rio?
In Rio. Brilliant. Yeah, so okay. Like, yeah, and like you go down, you walk down from the apartment block, and there's like Djokovic playing warm-up tennis and stuff and having a hit around, like as if it's like a Sunday afternoon watching the local guy having a knock around. So yeah, it's really cool. Like, you're literally rubbing shoulders. Like, Justin Rose, the golfer from GB, won gold. We were there like the gym with him, having conversations and stuff. And like, it just feels as though we're normal people walking down the street. But again, at the same time, in the back of your mind, you're competing for a gold medal. So yeah, it's really powerful. Humans to kind of elite athletes. So yeah, it's really cool.
We've got the leading all-time try scorer in the World Rugby Sevens series with over 350 tries, Dan Norton, in studio with us. I mean, he's the man who's really keeping this conversation going, because he's the one with the medal, Olympic medal, Chris.
Silver medal from 2016. He was just telling us off air, was Dan, that he was also at Tokyo, which again, I apologise for that, Dan. That dropped off my radar, because again, we alluded to it before the break. Who the heck remembers Tokyo 2020 or 2021, as the case may be?
2016, let's revisit there, Dan, if we can. We want to talk about the silver medal and your own kind of experience of taking the team, England as it was, Great Britain, the team all the way to that final. But also, it was a great Olympic Games as well. If memory serves me correctly, was it not the swan songs for both Usain Bolt and Michael Phelps?
It was. You're absolutely right.
Did you manage to savour any of that? Did you, in terms of other events while you were competing, did you experience the Olympic Stadium, any of that kind of thing?
Yeah, so during our time, we had like 5 days after the event to actually go and see Brazil or go and see Rio as much as we could and see the other Olympic experience. We watched kind of one or two events. We enjoyed ourselves probably a bit too much from the off field.
Fair play to you.
Did a few of the iconic stuff. So went to see the Christ Redeemer, watched on the volleyball.
Did you manage to bypass the queues? Because
I've
been stuck
there. Longest ordeal in the world.
Oh my God.
Right?
It's about nine buses. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. But yes, it's a long ordeal getting up there and getting back
every
down.
Every time you think you've reached the final queue, you get to the end of that queue and you find out that you've got to take a bus to another queue. It's crazy. It's crazy. And then the taxi drivers, they refuse to acknowledge, even though they all know what Christ the Redeemer means. They want you to say Cristo Redentor. They're very clear on that. So we're like, Christ the Redeemer, and they're looking at us going, what do you want me to take you? And then eventually we Googled it. I was there for the World Cup in 2014, obviously as a tourist. And eventually Cristo Redentor. And he's like, oh, yeah. And then off he goes. But yeah, an amazing experience. And Rio itself is a stunning place, isn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of a crazy time. Like, there was obviously Zika happening as well. Yeah. So like, that kind of changed things a little bit of the dynamic. There was kind of the pickpocketing and there's loads of crime videos going around. So the security team in GB were very hot on this. We had like this downloaded app on our phones. They knew where we were at every moment. So if we stepped out of like a certain area, then an alert would go off and they'd then like come and rescue us in a way. So they were very much like do not misbehave, you rugby lads, behave yourselves, don't go too crazy, enjoy yourselves, you're on a flight in 5 days, don't miss your flight kind of thing. So we were like, fine.
I love that.
Let's go and enjoy ourselves.
You're rugby lads, as in the implication there, of course, being that you're loose. Therefore, we might actually lose you over the course of the 5 days. That final itself, and again, a lot's been said, and we've had been very fortunate, Dan, to catch up with yourself, with Ben Ryan, and unpack the memories of that first Rugby Sevens final. I'll whisper the scoreline, Fiji 43, Great Britain 7. You did score the try, though, for Great Britain.
Yeah, it's irrelevant, isn't it?
It is. I mean, let's be frank. Coming into it, the kind of fairy tale story was the Fijians, wasn't it? With the greatest respects to Great Britain, this was a chance for Fiji to win their first gold medal. Ben Ryan over there, the wonderful stories of coming out. Did you feel a little bit like you guys were on a hiding to nothing heading into that final?
So, like, yeah, obviously, I've read Ben Ryan's book, and obviously, he highlights a couple of altercations in the warm-up and kind of in the tunnel, which kind of didn't really happen, but again, it's worth obviously the bit of spice in the book. From our side, like, you're playing an Olympic final, so regardless of what's kind of gone before you or the form, it's like it's 14 minutes of give everything you've got, and that was kind of in our heads. And I think kind of the tournament itself was over 3 days, so two games a day. We played five of our six games by one score. So within that, it's kind of a very emotional, draining ordeal. Quarterfinal, we won, I think, extra time by a score. Semi-final, we won 7-5 against South Africa and then got actually humped in the final. So, it was a bit of a frustrating kind of way to finish it. But at the same time, like, the whole journey of getting there from being, obviously, normally we're three nations of being England, Scotland, Wales. Then you're bringing together 30 guys for 13 weeks to prepare for an Olympic Games is pretty unheard of. You're competing against New Zealand or the Australians or South Africa who've done it for 4 years or 6 years. We've got 13 weeks to prepare for an Olympic medal. So, like, it was stacked against us. And, yeah, it wasn't a massive emotional journey of getting that far, the quarterfinal into the semifinal, into the final. Standing in the tunnel against these 6'4" Fijians, I felt as though I was going to win a gold medal. That was
Did
in my
you?
Head. Yeah, yeah, of course. What's the point of being there?
Not of course.
You're going to win a gold. So, like, in my head, I was like, we're going to win a gold here.
Were they the favourites?
It was very, there's kind of, they were the top kind of two or three. And I think within sevens, it's 40 minutes and the bounce of the ball can change everything. Into the final, the bounce of the ball did not help us at all. We had momentum, we lost 43-7. But yeah, I think after the 15 minutes of the final, after the final whistle and like 15 minutes later, it was actually a bit of perspective actually being like, we've won an Olympic medal here. Like, that's pretty powerful. And having my dad there in the stands, being able to kind of look through or like recite my own head, like the journey of starting rugby at 9 years old to then being 28, playing an Olympic final, like, it's unheard of. So, like, yeah, it was really cool to be able to actually look back and enjoy it, and hence the 5 days post that were quite some cool memories made as well. So the whole thing was really rose-tinted and really cool experience.
I always reference the Robbie, in actual fact, as you, and I'll give you full credit for this, Rob, you often make this point when we've got Olympians in our humble abode or if we've got a football or what have you. In other sports, a runner-up medal is actually seen with quite a lot of disdain. I think of Champions League finals, World Cup finals. The runner-up team goes up and quickly those medals come off. The Olympic Games is unique in that a bronze, a silver, or gold, in a lot of respects, it doesn't really... Now, hold your horses. I know people might think, well, it does, Chris. A gold, of course, is better than a bronze. But in a lot of ways, there's not that discrepancy. You've won an Olympic gold medal, regardless of the colour. In the cold light of day, do you see it as such? Is your silver medal one of your most now prized possessions, Dan?
Yeah, so I think there was that 15-20 minute spell after the final of being like feeling pretty dejected and feeling like we've kind of missed a massive opportunity. And you have all these thoughts in your head. But then I think for me, it took a bit of time to realise actually, this is actually something really powerful. Like, I've won an Olympic medal.
Yeah.
From off the back of that 13 weeks of not knowing if I was going to get selected, and then to the fact that we actually a brand new squad, to then actually winning a medal from the quarterfinal, semi-finals, kind of really short, close games. Like, yeah, it was really cool. It is my prized possession. I think it's something that carries a lot of, obviously, weight around. It's not just me, the player. Like, there's, it connects with a wider audience because you can just say Olympics and everybody knows what it is. And if you say Olympic medal, like, people go crazy. So, like, I took it into the office and Gabby and the other guys were moaning because it's a bit scratched, but it's like it's got a lived-in look. It's cool. It just captivates such an audience, and it's so powerful. And unfortunately, it's kept in a drawer But again, it's still pretty cool to walk around the house knowing I've got an Olympic medal.
You don't make breakfast with it draped around your neck, then.
Occasionally. Yeah, use a doorstop or something.
Exactly. Oh, that's pretty cool. That is very cool. And what was the ceremony itself like? Was the whole team up on the podium?
Yeah, so Princess Anne was doing the medals. So obviously, I think the bronze goes first, then we go second, and the golds go last. Just being able to stand there and just be in that moment with 13 other guys, seeing the team and the management there and stuff. It's really cool. And it's just something that I'm really fond of looking back on. I think it does feel really weird when I think about 2021, because I still attended those Olympics, I still participated in those Olympics, but it feels like such polar opposites. And then when you look at 2024 with Paris, like that feels more like the 2016, 2012 kind of London Olympics and Rio Olympics. That's going to be more cultural opportunities to be and explore the country. There's no social distancing, there's no masks, there's attendances as well. So like it feels more natural. But it still feels a bit of a void, that 2021-20 game.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we spoke about Tokyo being a little bit underwhelming in comparison, Dan, due to the fact that, well, it wasn't as successful from a team perspective, and it was that very strange time. I mean, everyone has a story about that particular period in time, the pandemic and training and obviously not knowing whether the Olympics would go ahead at all. And so many of those athletes, they train for years for this moment. It's a four-year cycle. For many of them, it is just a one-time thing where they get one opportunity. And what was it like for you? I mean, you'd been to the 2016 game, so maybe there was a bit less pressure on it, but it must have been a strange experience training in the circumstances that were presented to you.
Yeah, so for us, obviously, COVID hit March 2020. Kind of later that year in August, we got made redundant by the RFU. So that kind of blew our kind of Olympic dreams into the abyss. So that was kind of frustrating, kind of training on our own. That was a really tough time, like not knowing if we actually would be going to the Olympics at all. Then kind of into March kind of 2021, that's when we kind of got brought together as a team. So again, social distancing, masks, etc. And then training together for 4 months into the Olympics and then getting selected. So it was a really weird time. But I think for everybody, they just wanted the games to go ahead, to have the opportunity to actually participate. Very fortunate to have the opportunity to go to the Olympics. But like I said, it was probably one that I look back on, I think maybe that kind of could have been a little bit different from my
perspective. It can't have been fun. I mean, in terms of, were you kept in incredibly, like, I remember all the protocols for, it was behind closed doors, so there were no spectators, but there must have just been so many hoops to jump through.
Yeah, 100%. And I think at that point, we just wanted it to go ahead, so we didn't really care. Like, we were doing everything and anything to kind of, legally, to get into the Olympics.
Yeah.
So, the testings we were going through kind of every day, PCR tests in the morning, it kind of became the norm. It was an awesome experience. It was amazing to be part of the Olympics, but comparing it to 2016 and having family there, having attendances, having people watching, screaming, and flags, etc. That's what the Olympics is about. It's not about the one sport. It's about bringing together a massive cross connection of people who just enjoy sport, or even just the experience of actually being at the games.
And I'm not sure I'm going out on too much of a limb here when I say I'm genuinely excited about Paris 2024, because one thing we know about any entity that sets up, whether it be a sporting event, an entertainment event, they're going to go all out. There's a feeling that I've certainly got that they know that Tokyo missed the mark through no fault of their own. It's going to be extra special. It's going to be a proper party. 10,500 athletes, 329 events, just over 2 weeks. It's going to be special in Paris, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I'm very jealous of the guys who get to go. And there's some amazing memories, I think, for the guys who will be going there to set those. So, I think from a city itself, it's an amazing place. Like, I'm a big fan of being in Paris, been there a few times, like the culture, the wine, everything, the food, the cuisine. Yeah. It's an amazing place. It's beautiful, the art, the culture. Like, it makes an amazing opportunity to actually bring together something bigger than just sport. And that's kind of why it's quite powerful, especially at the current time as well, with a lot of things going on in the region, that to be able to be brought together through sport, competing for something bigger than just that, is really powerful as well. And that's kind of what sports always had. They had that angle of being a bigger than just something happening kind of day to day. It's about bringing together people and, colliding together for sport.
I'm right in saying you've been to an Olympics, Rob. Did you?
I have not, no. I've never been to an Olympics, no. No, I haven't. Well, I mean, my parents actually volunteered because they were living nearby.
In
2012, they were up by the lake, the rowing. I can't remember the name of it now, but they were up there doing some volunteer work. And
they
as you say, it gets the community and everyone who it gets the locals on board. And I think with the way the World Cup has kind of moved, because you'd say the World Cup is probably the biggest global sporting event, but the way FIFA have decided to disseminate and they're taking it now to three countries in 2026, and it's going to lose that kind of real identity, I think, that the Olympics has kept. And then it's kind of, they're having some crazy plan for the 100-year celebration of it, aren't they? Where they're going to start in South America and then they're going to end up in North Africa and then they're going to go to Europe.
This is the FIFA World Cup.
This is the FIFA World Cup. And the Euros have gone down a similar path with hosting it in multiple countries. The fact that the Olympics still goes to a city, Dan, and Rio, you know, your experience of that, it's one of the most spectacular cities on the planet. But, you know, that makes it special because the fans get to really soak up one location.
Yeah.
And it just adds to that carnival, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%. So, like, again, as you mentioned, 2012 in London, like, I think the buzz, the hum around the whole of the country, around kind of what the games brought to the city was amazing. To the country, it was amazing. We were lucky to watch a few of the events, you know, close to where we were training as in Twickenham. And you can just feel the whole, I said, community feel of people coming together to watch something really cool. And yeah, I think that then obviously then kind of led in 2016. And I'm hopeful that'll be the same in 2024. I think it does have an amazing opportunity to be something really, really special, probably one of the best games.
And that's it. If you're a proper sporting fan, as all of us in this room are, you think of the Olympic Games, yes, you've got the Olympic Stadium, but then you've got the marathon and the road race and cycling that encapsulates the city itself. Throw in Roland Garros, which has been used for the tennis, home, of course, of the French Open. Throw in the
Golf National.
Throw in the fact you've got a Ryder Cup golf course, which has been used for the Olympics. If you're travelling into Paris, it is a pastiche of some of the great venues that we've all come to know and love through the years as being sporting fans, whether that's golf, whether it be tennis, whether it be marathon running. It really does encapsulate it all, which I think is unique in itself.
Yeah, 100%. I think that you hit the nail on the head there. Like, it just brings everything together in one place. Like, where else do you get so many amazing locations? But again, it's not just the sport is obviously a big part of the journey, but it's also the fact that you can actually venture around the actual city and see those amazing other landmarks as well, right? So that's kind of where, like, the opening ceremony on the Seine and stuff, like 160 boats floating down there and 10,000 athletes. So, like, yeah, it makes a really exciting, this whole, you know, event and this whole spectacle. Yeah, it's really exciting.
I did hear about that. Is that being confirmed? They're not doing it in the stadium. They're doing that down the rivers.
I believe that's a big part of the actual opening ceremony. That's kind of why it's so special. Let's hope it doesn't rain, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank God it's not in Dubai.
When we look at, I mean, there's obviously some big storylines in other sports. Novak will be going for the gold medal in tennis, trying to win that for the first time. That's the one great prize that eludes him in his illustrious career. But there's definitely a feeling in track and field, and maybe to a lesser extent in swimming, because there's still some big stars in swimming. But those two sports really need like a standout kind of the next Usain Bolt, really, for sprinting. And I know Noah Lyles is making headlines, but do you feel that, Dan? Do you feel like there's someone that needs to come along and captivate everyone in track and field?
Well, yeah, 100%. I think we had that Usain Bolt for a very long time.
Yeah.
The Bolt. I think for me, obviously, I love the athletics. I remember in 2012, the Super Sunday with like Greg Rutherford and Mo Farah and stuff. Like, that was a really special day. And I think that's the same for the Olympics. Like, the athletics is a really big part of the event. And yeah, I'm really excited to see these guys like Shelly-Ann Fraser coming back after giving birth and stuff. There's some really cool guys, you know, Noah Lyles as well, running really well. Like, yeah, there's some really exciting opportunities and matchups coming up as well.
Sha'Carri Richardson, of course, she missed out in the last Olympics due to, let's just say, questionable. Well, I'm not going to get into it. It's too long of a story, but she is a star to look out for. I think the other big intrigue for me, Simone Biles, given what she went through, and obviously at a time where mental health has really come to the fore in the last few years, we've seen Naomi Osaka go through it. Simone Biles is the greatest gymnast I think there's ever been. I think we can safely say that. Yeah, she got a dose of the twisties during the last Olympic
Games. No one knew what the twisties were until she got them.
I mean, she got them and then we all knew what they were, but she's coming back new and improved. I think she's recently got married. In her personal life, she's a lot happier. You know, there's a lot of intrigue around her.
But she shone a spotlight on the pressure that gets put on youngsters, didn't she? you know, gymnasts in particular, it's high pressure stuff from the very young age of, like, she must have been training from 7, 8, 9, 10.
Oh, younger.
And because she was that good, the expectation and the national pressure that was placed on her becomes a burden that becomes difficult to shoulder after a while.
Yeah, 100%. Again, very lucky that we didn't have to face that too much from a young age in rugby. But I think from their perspective, like, just that pressure, being pushed from a young age, sometimes against their will, like, to go and do that sport. But I think for them, they know it's a very, it's a young athlete sport. They know they have to peak at a very young age. And I think credit to her taking actually a step back and actually saying, look, this isn't right, I don't feel right, I can't compete, is quite a powerful movement as well. So yeah, I think that's really showing, like, her character.
And obviously we're pushing the fact that amazingly, you know, there are opportunities to buy your tickets, premium tickets, to get over there to sample the Olympic Games in 2024. But it's interesting what you say there. On one hand, it is commendable, you know, if you're suffering, and certainly society has done a lot in recent years to say, hey, listen, you have a voice, speak up if you're struggling. On the other flip side of the coin, I think the big thing that's always amazed me about sport, and Dan, you're an elite sportsman, so we can say this to you, clutch, the ability to, when the pressure is at its highest, perform, is something that befuddles me. It truly blows my mind, whether it be, you know, Tom Brady in American football, whether it be Novak Djokovic in tennis, if we use, you know, Olympic parlance, Usain Bolt getting the job done over 100 metres, Katie Ledecky getting the job done in the swimming pool, to be able to produce your best when the cameras are clicking, when the spotlight is on you, it just blows my mind. Where does that come from?
Yeah, I think a big part of it is, like, natural ability, like something you're born with. Again, there's a big part you can train. I think that's probably the bit you don't see. So as much as you see a Usain Bolt jog in the last 10 metres of a 100-metre sprint, you don't see the other kind of 3.5 years of the effort that actually gets put into that 100 metres. And I think that's what elite sports, that's what the top cream of the crop guys do really well. They train endlessly and they give their all, the 100% when nobody's watching. And I think that's where it brings, that builds character, that gives you the moment of when you are competing in the Olympic Games, when it's probably the craziest time of your life, the pressure is probably the highest, that, like, you can actually slip into a very calm, methodical way of processing to actually get through and actually, you know, I said, go to that flow state and win a gold medal or something.
Stepping over the white line, did it come natural to you? Were you the kind of character in the dressing room that would be biting one's nails and you would require your teammates to calm you? Because again, you exude to me as if you were one of those blokes that would just, yeah, it's the final, I know what I'm good at, cross that white line and get the job done. What kind of character were you?
Yeah, so I think there's a, I think in the, when you're ever competing in the Olympics, or the time looking back, there was a level of actually teetering between being over excited for it. Again, this is massive, this is really daunting, to being, okay, fine, I try and find a middle ground of being quite calm. And I think it's easy to be ride that kind of teetering effect because you have the your family at home, your friends saying how exciting this is, and that kind of builds you up. And I think that gives you that natural kind of excitement. Me as a player, I was probably the other end. I was very anxious. So I'd kind of be having these real negative thoughts in the tunnel before a game, thinking, like, I don't want to go out there, I don't want to play, like these kind of overwhelming thoughts. And I think that's very natural for any sports person because you have, again, regardless of where you're playing sport or just walking or driving your car, you have these weird negative thoughts sometimes, and that's natural. And I think that's what took me a while to understand, that my role is to go out there and play a sport, which I really enjoy. And I'm going to have a little gremlin in my brain telling me I can't do that. And that's fine because I can work through that. It's fine. It's natural. Be okay with it. Move forwards. And I think that took a bit of time and a lot of psychological support as well from our psychologists as well. So, yeah.
You need it, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Like, even Novak says he gets nervous in a Grand Slam final. Yeah. Because if you're not nervous, that's something wrong. There's something 100%. Wrong if you're not.
I realised that. So we had our Olympic qualifier in 2015, I think it was. And it was only then when I realised actually feeling nervous is a really, like, looking back now, feeling nervous is a real nice feeling because you know you're ready for that moment. If I don't feel nervous, then I know something isn't right. So I miss those opportunities, having those real dopamine or adrenaline hits when I'm sat in the office behind a desk. You miss those theory moments of actually being like, am I good enough? Can I do this? And like, that's what drives you to be better. But yeah, I think for me as a player, it took a lot of time to really work out my own kind of psychological psyche of what brings the best out of me. And some people are very lucky to have that process, some people aren't. But yeah, it goes back to natural ability and just working as hard as possible to get to the top.
It's great hearing you say there, you miss that kind of dopamine hit. You're now in, as Ant Middleton would say, you know where I'm going with this, our good friend Ant Middleton would say, you're now in Civvy Street. You're doing the kind of regular jobs that everyone out there does, Dan. There would be a lot of people at the elite level who would struggle to make that migration, who would struggle to flick that switch. Have you struggled with it, honestly speaking, or have you slipped into it pretty seamlessly?
No, it's taken me like 2 years since playing to kind of find a kind of a direction. Again, everything you look at from reading posts on LinkedIn around job specs and kind of what the next job could be, it feels so alien to whatever life was what I did. And it's taken me kind of 2 years. You're kind of just like spinning around in the circles, not knowing where I'm going. But yeah, again, starting the new role I've been working in for the last 6 months. It's like being back at school again. But I'm excited by the opportunity. I've taken 2 years to actually find, okay, fine, that was then, this is then now. This is an exciting next kind of 10 years.
You've flown under the radar a little bit. Are rugby teams out here aware of your existence in Dubai? Have you been getting offers? Are you even playing any rugby?
So I've gone to watch a couple of rugby games. I've been heckled from the stand to come and play. I also played touch rugby on Wednesday.
Oh, jeepers.
And got beaten by some 14-year-olds. I was devastated. I was like, what's happening here? So yeah, no, it's been good fun mixing it with some old friends and playing a couple of touch games as well, some mixed touch. So I need to get my own back in a couple of months time.
Well, now that we know you live here, there's no hiding from us either, Dan. We're going to be dragging you in here on a regular basis as well. A reminder, premium tickets to sought after events, including the opening ceremony.
Yeah, that one. Want to labour on that very quickly. You've been to an opening ceremony. Amazing. Was it a kind of great experience, or are you just like, get this over with because I want to get back to bed?
So the kind of the bits you don't see, so it's kind of like a 2.5-3.5 hour kind of wait of kind of, again, like walking, marching around in circles, quite literally like airport kind of traffic, literally walking a meter to the side or 10 meters one way, 10 meters the other way to get to the actual opening ceremony. But yeah, once you're out there, it kind of blows everything away. You're in front of, 30,000 people, that anthems, you're there with the flag. Like, yeah, it's incredible. Your mum's seeing you on TV and stuff. Like, yeah, it's really cool.
Dan, thank you so much for popping in. It was an absolute pleasure chatting to you.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Top stuff, Dan.
Great stuff. Thank you for listening to the Extra Time Podcast.
With myself, Chris McCarty, and Robbie Greenfield.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate it, and please do give us a review.
This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Don't miss an episode. Subscribe today.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.